welcome to Cooks and Books on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Deborah Shapiro, and we're sponsored today by Hearst Ranch. And you might be wondering, why the mariachi music? Well, you know, on Cooks and Books, we try to have musical themes that fit with our guests, and my guest today is Chef Courtney Contos, and she's recently returned from a wonderful trip to Mexico, and she also has a family background with some fine dining and Mexican restaurants, and so she'll tell us a little bit about that. But if you listened to the show earlier in the month, you know that Chef Contos has a fabulous culinary background. She's worked with Charlie Trotter. She's taught cooking for the last 10 or 15 years, and she's really established herself as a wonderful culinary resource, not only in her community, in the Vermont community, but through what she's doing with streaming videos and the web, really can help people from just about anywhere. So I'm delighted to have her join me. Hello.
Thank you. Fun to
Welcome
be here.
Back.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, and great to have you back. And since we started with Mexico, let's talk a little bit about Mexico from the past and Mexico in the present.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a Mexican restaurant growing up called Maison de Lago. All my birthday parties were held there with piñatas,
and
of course.
And this was in Chicago.
This was in downtown Chicago on Ontario Street.
Oh, wow.
And Ontario and Michigan Avenue. And it was really authentic, you know. I mean, oh, it was huge, too. It was so fun. But we had a taco bar, and I think that's what was really unique and stood out about the Mexican restaurant. And it was there was always someone behind the bar that would answer questions or, you know, help you build your tacos or your plates. And all the different salsas were there and meats and tortillas, and it was just great fun, you know. It was just...
Now, your family is Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Your grandfather was Greek when
mm-hmm.
he started a French restaurant, Chez Paul. So why Mexico? Had he visited Mexico?
My father loved Mexico. So we went twice a year. I mean, I went twice a year. I don't know how many times he went. You know, probably a lot more. But Mexico, my whole life, you know, twice a year.
And what part of Mexico? Because now things have really evolved.
Mm-hmm. Cuernavaca. Cancun, Puerto Vallarta, Oaxaca. I used to live in Zihuatanejo. I lived there for 9 months when I was about 17. That's a whole other story. And then just recently I was in a new part that I hadn't been to, San Miguel.
Oh,
which
wonderful.
Which is 2 hours south of Leon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or Mexico City. I still wasn't sure. I just dropped there. It was like fabulous.
Drive.
I don't know exactly where I am, but we had great fun.
Well, so we were talking about the taco bar. It sounds like what you had in Chicago was fairly authentic,
mm-hmm.
Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
But how has it changed? So what did you find in San Miguel?
I took 4 cooking classes, and I remember signing up for one of them. One day was salsas, and I said to my teacher, I said, well, you know, I'm a chef. My friend I'm traveling with is a chef. Maybe we want to learn something different than salsas. Oh, my gosh. She went on for 10 minutes. Well, it's the foundation of the cuisine, and it's not pico de gallo, chop, chop, chop. It's, you know, and she was right. It was extensive, and there's no way if she handed me those recipes, because you write your own descriptions, that I would have known what to do. The details and the passion that they have there for their sauces, which is what salsa means, is just outrageously fun. It's just
so we always think of French sauce, right? We think of the mother sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's done classical training, right? The mother sauces,
mm-hmm.
and which I guess technique is a big part of that,
mm-hmm.
to get your hollandaise not to break.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're sharing that in Mexico, the sauce, which is a completely, how are they different? I mean, it's completely different.
Completely different. They're made with chilies. Generally, most all salsas will have chilies in them. And there are even the salsa rules, which, you know, she was very serious about in the class, you know, that we took notes on, that you don't mix fresh chilies with dried chilies in a salsa ever. You don't put 2 salsas on the same plate. And there's 2 more. I hope she's not listening. But the technique in dealing with the chilies, you know, there's so much respect to the chilies. And if you over-toast them, you know, they're bitter and they're instantly garbage, you know, or just, you know, thrown away because, they do burn so easily, and you're toasting them on what they call a comal. You know, it's this round, you know, nothing little pan that I just had to come home with, of course. but you toast, some of the chilies are toasted, and then they're soaked in water, and then carefully seeded, and then cooked in chicken stock with onion and garlic, and then blended, and then strained. And so that's just kind of a base, and then the chilies will change, and then sometimes in addition to chicken stock, there'll be orange juice and apple cider vinegar, and then in another one, there might be cinnamon sticks and black peppercorns, and then, you know, and the chilies are constantly changing. Those are the cooked dried chili salsas, and that's just a tiny taste of it. And then there's the fresh salsas, which, like ranchero, salsa ranchero, you char your tomatoes and your onion and your garlic, and then you blend it, and it's and your chilies, your serrano chilies. They use a lot of serranos.
So when you have a restaurant in Chicago, when your family, none of this was going on.
I was a little squirt, and I didn't spend much time in the kitchen.
But they probably, I don't know anybody
so I don't,
in the U.S.
No, I don't think so. And even if the New York Times 3 weeks ago in the food section, huge article on, you know, salsas, you know, not as we know it, you know, very different in Mexico.
Why do you think we're paying more attention to Mexico? Seems like we are paying a little more attention to Mexican
cuisine. There's a rich food scene there, a very rich food scene, unlike what we think it is. You know, here they have nicknames for the gringo salsa without the chilies in it. Huh. You know, the mild, you know, salsa with just tomatoes and no chilies. But there's a rich, beautiful history, and obviously, you know, Rick Bayless and they're wonderful chefs that have gone there and brought back what they've learned and opened restaurants and written cookbooks about it. But it's unbelievable. I mean, and what I loved was the simplicity of their kitchens. You know, they have their cazuelas, which are these big ceramic pots, and they have, you know, their wooden spoons that are hand-carved. But a lot of times they're cooking on coal, you know, just with this big, you know, comal, which is like this flat pan with just an inch of a lip around it, and it's large. And they're just cooking over coal, and that's it. That's all they need, and the food is just colorful, and you have the salsa and the chilies. They say that the meat is a big part of the cuisine, too, you know, the taco. The taco there, you just have meat and salsa. That's it.
Amazing.
It's really special. I took classes at a place called Saison, which Gourmet Magazine had recommended as the place to one of the 10 best places to take a cooking class in the world. And then the other school was Marilu, M-A-R-I-L-A-U, and she was very authentic and focused on tradition. You know, things were, we cooked with lard, and everything was very, like, her grandmother's recipes and recipes from the Aztecs, you know, things done the exact same way.
And how hard is it when you've cooked food there to make it taste that way in this country? How hard is it to get the ingredients the same? And
well, I've done it. I haven't stopped since I've gotten back. And the ingredients, I've asked two of the local stores here in Vermont that I shop at to carry the chilies that I'm going to be using on a regular basis. They've done that. And before that happened, I ordered them from Rick Bayless's website. He has a whole, all the chilies you can buy.
These are fresh or dried?
These are all the dried. The only fresh chilies are the serranos, which you can easily find, or the, or a jalapeno, and sometimes habanero. Those are the three fresh chilies that you'll, and poblanos. Okay,
yes,
so there's
a few.
But we cooked with hibiscus flour. Have you eaten those before?
Maybe a long time ago. Yeah, I didn't know they were edible.
They are edible. The flour is dried, and so you buy it dried, and you rinse it. You cook it for 20 minutes in boiling water. The boiling water then becomes tea, and then the leaves, you know, get cooked, you know, with the recipe with, like, tomatoes, and there was a pinch of sugar added and some onion and garlic. And anyways, you eat it as a taco filling or, you know, a little.
Now, it sounds kind of time-consuming, like one really has to plan.
What's interesting is that
a whole other part of your life, of course, is your culinary coaching and helping harried folks, moms, and helping them find ways to get into the kitchen. I don't imagine you're teaching them too many of these recipes.
Maybe not for, you know, my clients that want to have quick recipes for weeknight dinners. But for the cooking classes in people's homes, a lot of my clients use it as entertainment for Friday night dinner. Bring clients over, bring your friends over, and this is a way to celebrate food. Maybe we will never cook these recipes again, but how fun is it to cook it tonight? So that's what they're, I think a lot of people are doing. So I've done some Mexican cooking classes, and we'll continue. And maybe they'll make just the salsa, you know, one day, and that can go with grilled shrimp and, you know, poached chicken. So to do the whole menu, well, no, that's kind of, you really have to want to do it.
What really characterizes Mexican food then, the chilies, and then what beyond the heat? Because I always think of the chili just having the heat. And then, so there must be something, cumin? I mean, what
there's
are some
almost
of the other...
like a well, the dried chilies have such a different flavor. They're almost caramelly. So the dried chilies, which, I mean, before I went there, I knew a little bit about salsa. I own a lot of Mexican cookbooks, but I had no idea that the majority of the salsas are made with dried chilies. And the flavor is sweet and toasty and caramelly, and it depends on the chili, too. It might be smoky. But the corn, you know, the masa and the chilies, and then the meat. Gosh, I eat the sandwich there. The carnitas, generally you buy your meat cooked already because they're deep frying whole pigs and they're slow cooking pork shoulders. They start at the wee hours of the morning, and you just go to these little stands and you buy your meat already cooked. And you put that on a big roll, a bolillo, they call them, these big rolls with a pickled jalapeno on top, and you are
You're
good
happy.
To go.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's a whole different kind of cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't we take a short break now that we have all of our listeners salivating to find some fabulous Mexican food? And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about ingredients and some of the other things that you offer people. Like, I love that you call it the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15 that you've shared. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Chef Courtney Contos. Welcome back to the show. This is Cooks and Books, and I'm your host, Deborah Shapiro, with my guest, Chef Courtney Contos. We're here on the Heritage Radio Network, and our sponsor is Hearst Ranch. And if you were listening to the first half of the show, you took a little trip with us to Mexico. Some of you might have run out and had to go grab yourself a taco or a delicious, what was that called, a carnitas?
Carnitas, yeah.
A delicious carnitas.
But no chips.
No chips there. Yeah, what about those chips?
No chips.
That's an American invention? That's interesting. Some of the different things that we do over here to make it our food.
And they're good. I love chips, but don't go to Mexico and ask for chips.
Don't go looking for them. So, Courtney, one of the things you do, of course, is you help a lot of people. I'm really intrigued with how well you're using technology to take something like food and make it so accessible. And so folks who might have listened to the show earlier in the month learned that Chef Contos actually can do streaming video. Someone could call her up and ask her to actually demo how does she roast a pepper, and then they could follow her and watch her do that. But I want to talk a little bit about ingredients in the U.S. and what you're finding, how you've evolved from that time you spent in Charlie Trotter's kitchen. What's sort of on the plate now? It's spring here in Vermont. What are we seeing?
Well, this morning at the grocery store, I saw ramps. I was so excited. You know,
oh,
those
really?
Wild onions that are just famous here in Vermont. I feel like they're everywhere. So I just noticed that. I was thrilled to see those because what follows next out here is the morels and the asparagus.
Right. And the fiddleheads.
And the fiddleheads.
Which will be coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk a little bit about, you had something recently on your blog about the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15, and I know that's a national list that people can get access to, but one of the great things you do is you bring this information to folks who may not have the time to search for all of it, and maybe it's a good idea to share a little bit with us about how important is it to be conscious of the Dirty Dozen, the Clean 15, organic, and all of that.
Well, for me, it's been a way of life, 17 years now to eat organic foods. So I'm very passionate, and I'm very lucky that the people, my clients, when I go into their homes, a lot of them are sharing that same enthusiasm that maybe I've, you know, helped them along with. But it's so important to me. And now I have, I don't know, 100 little seedlings growing at home because I have a big garden that I'm planning for this year. You know, 50 heads of cauliflower, and you know, I'm really into it. And I'll be blogging about the garden, and I have no idea what I'm doing. So I really encourage everyone to have a garden, because you just learn every year. You just learn a little bit more. This is only my second year, and last year was a big success. So, grow something, anything.
Well, but and how does the organic apply though? So you know, so if I decided that I was going to start a garden. Mm-hmm. I guess if I did a raised bed, mm-hmm. I could bring in organic mulch and soil. Mm-hmm. But what about folks who, I mean, the cost is somewhat different. Is the fact that it be local and in your own yard the key, or?
Well, eating seasonal and the CSAs, you know, we hear over and over that the CSAs actually are affordable in the end. When you have that box delivered and you total it up, you get quite a bit of food in there, produce-wise. And try not to eat, you know, strawberries organic from Chile or Mexico in December. I mean, that's always been, you know, I haven't had a strawberry since last July, and I won't eat another one until June 10th. And that's just the way it is, you know, and you'll find that. I mean, asparagus is going to be in season here, and it's just very affordable, and you eat as much as you possibly can. You're sick of it till next year, or you freeze it, or what. But
and so it sounds like part of affordability is in season, mm-hmm. and that if people start to look at that sort of that link between seasonal things being more available and mm-hmm. affordable, then maybe the organic is a little bit more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
But what about this whole notion of prioritizing local over organic?
That's, you know, that's absolutely true. I do know that some of the strawberry farms that I want to support, they might, they say that they don't spray, but, you know, they might, and I still buy some of their strawberries, you know, because it is two blocks from my house, and I can walk there, and they do taste wonderful, you know, and I'm hoping that they're still really, you know, like they said, they don't really spray. So
uh-huh.
Sometimes it won't say organic, but they are, and they just haven't gone through all the paperwork to do that. And their heart is in the right place, but it's really, you know, can be a pain to go through the transition process. So, and there are the list, the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen will help you so that you don't have to buy everything organic. You know,
uh-huh.
there are some that you just know you shouldn't, you know, apples, cherries, you know, the pesticides really seep in, and, you know, gosh, I get really fired up that we should not be eating them.
Well, maybe we should just take a second, and I'll share the Dirty Dozen. Apples, pears, carrots, cherries, strawberries, lettuce, bell peppers, peaches, celery, nectarines, grapes, and kale. So all of those, we should be making an effort to find organic, and definitely without pesticides. And then some of the ones that are a little bit less of a concern, it seems as I look at the list, most of them either have a bigger skin,
mm-hmm.
and those would be things like sweet potatoes, broccoli, watermelon, eggplant, onions, pineapple, which we don't ever have locally here in
mm-hmm.
Vermont, avocados and mangoes, those are two more that we never get to have here, asparagus, sweet peas, kiwi fruit, cabbage, eggplant, papayas, and tomatoes. So those tend to be a little bit less of a risk
mm-hmm.
when one is concerned. Now, since you're a chef, how about the effect of taste, not just health, but what about the effect on taste when things are grown one way or another?
Well, the conventional food, especially when shipped from far away, even if it's sometimes organic, if it's shipped from far away, the taste is poor. So, and you kind of learn over time what, you know, what will taste better. I mean, carrots are going to be fine, but you can find carrots year-round where you live because, you know, they hold up really well. So you can do it. You know, you really can do it. I mean, onions are fine. they hold up. Some things you can grow and keep them in the ground, right, until spring, like potatoes and sunchokes. But there's very little that I buy conventional, and I know, you know, I might be unique and odd, and it's one of the reasons I wanted to live in Vermont, because you feel it's easier to live that way here, whereas in Chicago, at least when I was there, it was a challenge to be that odd person that eats organic food. You know, you're doing a lot of driving to different stores and different markets. But I'm passionate about it, and I think if we can just make these small little steps, you know, look at the list on the website, it'll be helpful. And you taste the difference.
Right, which makes you want to do it. And, of course, you know, here we are on the Heritage Radio Network, and the folks at Heritage have done as much or more than anybody in the country to really make wonderful, well-raised food available. And one thing I also wanted to ask you about, because we're getting into the season where someone can purchase a half of a lamb, or, and I know I've always been a little intimidated, because I know the trend now is eating as much of the animal as possible and not to waste. Do you offer a way to help people through that? You know, sort of the whole animal nose to tail idea.
Absolutely. And I think once you have it in front of you, they tend to cryovac all the different parts, and you realize, oh, there's the lamb chop, there's the shoulder, you know, there's the leg, and you can see it a little bit differently, you know, than this whole, you know, animal. They, you know, they butcher it for you, and then you can search recipes or call me and figure out what to do with that shoulder.
And find a way to cook it.
And what's fun about buying the whole animal, I just think is so cool, is then you just have one, you know, loin, or you just have these couple racks, and you'll remember every year when you eat those. You know, it becomes a special occasion. Not like, oh, we just went to the store and got some, you know, it's really special to buy a whole animal, and you'll remember that meal so well when you had, you know, the parts of your favorite parts of the animal when you cooked them and you celebrated them with different friends, or maybe you make a tradition and you have it every Christmas. So it's the way to go. And, you know, I eat meat, but I think, you know, eating meat every day, I think we can cut back just a tiny, you know, just a hair, and that would be okay. And a whole animal should last a family a while.
Well, and another thing I really appreciate after speaking with you is how much food ties into celebration and the meaning that you give to it, and that it doesn't have to be a celebration on the calendar, but as you just said, we can just be celebrating the fact that it's this season and that this animal is here for us, and it's been well cared for, and we want to honor it in how we prepare it and share it.
We do that at home all the time, and we will have an asparagus party. You know, there will be, it will be very exciting. But we celebrate a lot. You know, this month seems like we had Greek Easter, and then not too long ago, what, last month we had St. Patrick's Day. And, you know, there's always something going on at the house. We don't miss a holiday.
Well, and then you did, do you still have all your cookies up on the blog?
Yes.
That you did?
Mm-hmm.
And Courtney did a wonderful Christmas celebration where for the entire month of December she did a different cookie recipe, and I hope you'll do it again this coming year.
Oh,
I know nobody wants to think about Christmas right now because it's finally starting to be spring, but if you need any great cookie recipes, that was a lot of fun. One thing I want to ask you about is, what couldn't you live without in the kitchen? What are, both from an ingredient perspective and a tool perspective, what do you find essential in your kitchen?
And I'm sure this would change, you know, daily, you know, these thoughts, but essential, my grill pan, my Le Creuset reversible grill pan, the one that goes over both burners, is one of my favorite pieces. The toaster is gone. I use that for, you know, from toast to grilling to, I just made, I don't know what it was, something on the flat top, eggs the other day. So I love that pan. You can use it for quite a bit of just everyday cooking. And the grill part adds a lot of flavor. And then ingredients, well, lately I couldn't live without tahini sauce.
Really? What are you doing with tahini?
Apple cider.
Sesame, right?
Yeah, sesame paste. Apple cider vinegar or lemon juice, chili flakes, and salt, and water. And I just, we have it salad dressings. We have it over meats and vegetables. It's just become a...
something you'd like.
You know, it's like, make sure we have tahini sauce. Tahini and chili flakes. And I probably use
pretty
chili
key.
Flakes a lot.
Mm-hmm. And then since we are called Cooks and Books, and I know you're working on your own book, still in progress, but mm-hmm. you've got your concept and you're working through that. But what are some of the books that you'd recommend if listeners were thinking about, you know, three books to add to their collection?
Mm-hmm. Well, I really like The Market Vegetarian. I'm drawing a blank on his name, but anyways, you'll find it. The Market Vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
That book lives in my kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And you know, not to be weird, but The Joy of Cooking never leaves the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And those are the only two books that live in the kitchen right now.
Okay.
I enjoy reading the food, you know, stories and novels, the Amanda Hesser, the Cooking for Mr. Latte.
Uh-huh.
That, to me, will always just be a classic, and the Ruth Reichel, you know, Tender to the Bone. I just have always enjoyed reading about food in people's lives. The Sharper the Knife, The Less You
uh-huh.
Cry.
Uh-huh.
I loved I Lost, I Ate Spaghetti. You know, there's all these
wow.
fun books where
yeah.
if you're into food and cooking, it's nice to read about them. And they always have recipes. Like Cooking for Mr. Latte has a lemon pound cake in there that's just ridiculous. Really good.
Really good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we should mention that Chef Contos's recipes are going to be included in the Edible. There's a cookbook coming out from Edible Communities. Tracy Ryder and Carol Topalian have put together a wonderful collection called Edible, A Celebration. And it's published by Wiley. That'll be coming out sometime this month. And Chef Contos has two recipes, and they were actually featured in Edible Green Mountains in our first winter issue in 2008. And one is for a wonderful brisket, and another is for a fabulous cheddar cheese soup. So those are things you'll probably put on your list to be making in the fall. You probably aren't going to make those right when you get the book this spring. But highly touted, very very popular recipes around here, and people have really enjoyed them. So I think we're just about out of time, and I want to thank you again for sharing two wonderful shows with me. It's really been fun. I always learn when I speak to you and get inspired. I just want to leave and go run into my kitchen. And we should remind people it's chefcontos.com or chefcontos.blogspot.com. And you've been listening to Cooks and Books. I'm Deborah Shapiro. We're here on the Heritage Radio Network. And I want to thank Hearst Ranch again for being our sponsor. And I'd like to dedicate these shows from this week to Steve Waltine, a dear friend who lives in my heart and was a big inspiration and a big cheerleader for us. So thanks so much.